Just to, by way of a little bit of review, I will remind you that section 1 that went from chapter 1, verse 2 down through 3, chapter 3, verse 5, we saw the initiation of this relationship, and it's characterized by admiration for one another and praise for each other. The second section went from, actually that was just basic verses 1, chapter through the first 11 verses. Then chapter, the second phase dealt with the growth and of love and its intensity. That theme of the second section, it went from chapter 1, verse 12 through chapter 3, verse 5, dealt with anticipation. We saw the elevation because of the admiration. We saw the intensity of the anticipation because of the praise. We saw the growth of passion. In the third section that went from chapter 3, verse 6, down through chapter 5, verse 1, we saw the consummation. We saw the that section would be characterized, section 1, by praise, followed by passion. This section would be characterized by pleasure. And then last time we were here, we looked at chapter 5, verse 2, through chapter 6, verse 13. And what we were seeing there were problems. Problems that were associated with the maturation of marriage. So we've been through the admiration, anticipation, consummation, and we're in the maturation stage of the relationship. And last time we had to overcome some problems. You'll remember the husband came in from being out tending to his duties or whatever in the night, dripping with dew. He wanted to come in and be with his wife, and her response was, "I'm already in bed. I can't be bothered. I don't want to have to get up." And but she did. She regretted that. And we saw that when she did get up and go open the door to let him in, he was gone. And that led to an intense search. But we saw that what we saw, and the lesson from last time was basically that, look, you're not going to be in this thing called marriage very long until you're going to realize there are some challenges associated in this thing, associated with marriage. I've often said that if love is a dream, marriage is the alarm clock. It's the wake-up call. And but what we learned from last time was, as you face the problems in marriage, the key, you know there's going to be problems, the key is in how you respond to them. And we saw that there was a lot of focus between the two couples in the relationship on the on remembering what it was that attracted them to each other in the beginning. And we see the admiration restored. We see the anticipation kind of refreshed. And as we come to chapter 7, we're seeing the continuation of this praise. The beloved, the lover is praising his beloved. This is the admiration of the bridegroom at the beginning of chapter 7. So let's read at least maybe these first 6 verses. He says, "How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter. The curves of your hips are like jewels, the work of the hands of an artist. Your navel is like a round goblet which never lacks mixed wine. Your belly is like a heap of wheat fenced about with lilies." I'm guessing that most of you ladies would not necessarily accept that kind of praise and you know, adoration for your beauty in those terms, but they're verse 3, your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like a tower of ivory. That's familiar language even in this book, because we've seen that two or three times now. Your eyes are like pools in Heshbon by the gate of Beth Rabim. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon. I would think that'd be a way of saying, boy, you got a big old honker on you, which faces toward Damascus. Your head crowns you like Carmel, and the flowing locks of your head are like purple threads. The king is captivated by your tresses. How beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. I will say that while we might have a difficult time understanding the imagery of this poetic language, one thing we can't miss is the reality of a restored love, right? This guy, whatever he's saying, he's gotten over whatever the issue was that caused the problem. He has forgotten about the rejection back in the first part of chapter 5, and there has been a total restoration in this relationship. And I would, thinking about your own marriage relationship, how important is complete restoration after there's conflict? How difficult is it sometimes to work through the issue all the way to complete resolution? And maybe this isn't true of you, but isn't there a danger in the longer that we are married, the longer we live with somebody, we just, rather than go through the difficult process of resolving the conflict completely, don't we just kind of agree to disagree and refuse to work towards total reconciliation? I think that's a danger. Don and I have been struggling with, you know, things that we need to purpose to continue to work to resolve the things that challenge us. So what's he saying here? Well, her feet are beautiful. I don't know how you feel about somebody's feet, but I like my wife's feet. I'll try not to embarrass you here, babe. I think we can understand the attractiveness of the curves of a beautiful woman's hips. He compares these to the work of the hands of an artist. He's obviously very much visibly stimulated by what he sees in his beautiful wife, and I think that's perfectly appropriate and as it should be. Her body, he goes on to talk about the navel as a round goblet that never lacks mixed wine, the belly like a heap of wheat. The best I can come up with for an explanation of that symbolism is that, you know, wine, her body is as desirable and intoxicating as wine. And I think we can understand that. Wheat was one of the main food sources of ancient Palestine. Thus, his wife gave both his wife was both his food and drink. In other words, she was her physical expressions of love nourished and satisfied him. Verses 3 and 4, the breasts compared to fawns. He says, your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. We've seen that before also. And you'll remember that I think that's a reference to softness, because a newborn critter of about any kind is very very soft, and you like to, you know, hold, stroke it and pet that animal because it feels so soft. And when he's talking about here her neck like a tower of ivory, he's not calling her a long neck. She had a very stately, majestic, queenly appearance about him. I think this is a recognition of just, as we read through these next few verses, a recognition of just how appropriately suited this particular woman is as a queen to him as a king. It's not just her beauty, but it's her character. It's her demeanor. It's everything about her he is pleased with. Eyes like pools in Heshbon. That was a Moabite city famous for its fertility and its water reservoirs. Her nose like the Tower of Lebanon, which faces toward Damascus, is reflects her strong character. And by comparing her head to Mount Carmel in verse 5, your head crowns you like Carmel. It's again, I think, a reflection of this queenly, majestic appearance that she had. Her hair so beautiful that, you know, he's captivated by its beauty. He concludes verse 6 with calling her, "How beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms." Well, recognition and the observation of beauty, I don't care how long you've been married, there should not be the death of the desire between the two people in a married relationship. You ought to always desire one another. The husband should have an ongoing, lifelong desire for the physical beauty and attractiveness of his wife. The wife ought to have that same desire towards her husband. We see that desire expressed in verse 7. "Your stature is like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. And I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit stalks. Oh, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and the fragrance of your breath like apples." He's comparing her love. And again, I think this is later in the marriage relationship. The intensity of the desire is still strong, and he wanted to enjoy the sweet and intoxicating fruit of her love. Verse 9, "Your mouth like the best wine. It goes down smoothly for my beloved, flowing gently through the lips of those who fall asleep." A lot of people think this is that we've changed who's speaking here, that in verses 7 and 8, the husband is speaking here, it's the wife. She's responding to his expression of desire by comparing his mouth to the best wine that goes down smoothly and flowing gently through the lips. I think this should just serve as a reminder to us of the beauty, the complete appropriateness of a physical desire that should exist between a husband and a wife. And it shouldn't, I mean, it's, I think nature's going to take its toll, okay? The aging process has an impact on the intensity of the desire in the physical relationship. But it should, we shouldn't let that kill it. We should continue to focus on each other as these are here, on what is attractive about the other. And this leads us to verse 10, which is kind of a refrain. We've seen a similar refrain. This is kind of like a song, okay? This was poetic, just to kind of remind you of the context of the whole book. It was written as a poem, and it was sung as a song. And in songs, we have refrains. And in verse 10, we find this refrain that's it's worded a little bit differently, but it says, I am my beloved's. And before it said, I am my beloved's and what? And he is mine. Here, I am my beloved. I am my beloved's. It's a little different, and his desire is for me. It's a way of emphatically stating possession. And she understands. Here's what I think she's captured out of this most recent conversation. Yeah, we've been married for a while now. We've been through some problems in our relationship. But the things that he just said to me affirm that I and I alone belong to him. And he wants nobody else but me. She had grown in the security of his love that she could say now that his desire was for only her. And this leads to her response, verse 11, beginning in verse 11. This is her response to him. This is an invitation. She is going in these verses to initiate the physical intimacy. This is coming at her request. Come, my beloved, verse 11. Let us go out into the country. Let us spend the night in the villages. Let us rise early and go to the vineyards. Let us see whether the vine has budded and its blossoms have opened and whether the pomegranates have bloomed. And there I will give you my love. The mandrakes have given forth fragrance, and over our doors are all choice fruits, both old and new, which I have saved up for you, my beloved. She asked him, let's go. Let's have a night away together. This is the first time that she has, in a direct way, requested to be with her husband. She's having grown more secure in her love for her husband. She's free now. She feels a freedom now to initiate the lovemaking. And she says, let's get away. Spring, it's the things that are described here, the blossoms, whether the blossoms have opened, the pomegranates have bloomed. What's the time of the year that all that happens? It's the springtime, and spring is kind of the universal symbol of love. And mandrakes, from what I understand, are similar in size to apples and red in color and were supposedly an aphrodisiac. So I would just, at the risk of maybe embarrassing someone, hope not, I would say couples that I think a good sign of a healthy marriage relationship is that it's not always the husband chasing the wife. We like to be chased too. We like to know that, you know, we're desirable to our spouse. She does, this is good for the relationship when she does this here. This leads to, in chapter 8, a desire for greater intimacy. There's a growing desire for greater intimacy, and I don't think it's just physical intimacy. Here's what she says. This is her speaking. "Oh, that you were like a brother to me who nursed at my mother's breasts. If I found you outdoors, I would kiss you. No one and no one would despise me either." In the Near East culture, public displays of affection were not acceptable except among certain members of your household. And I guess it was not acceptable necessarily for two lovers to express their love openly. It should be reserved for private, that we'll see when we get down here a little ways. But her desire was to be able to express that openly without shame. She wanted to be able to show physical expressions of her love appropriately. So that's what she means here with, "I wish you were like a brother to me and a friend." I think this verse 2 is a reference to friendship, the importance of friendship in the marriage relationship. "I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother who used to instruct me. I would give you spiced wine to drink from the juice of my pomegranates." This was a typical way something you would do for a friend who came and was a guest in your house. And here's what I hope this would lead to. Verse 3, "Let his hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me." But verse 4, "I want you to swear," we've read this before too, "I want you to swear, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases." That's an expression, every time through this book, that's an expression of, let's just make sure that everything is appropriate. Back in the courtship, we read that statement, and it was, okay, let's let this love grow and progress, but let's keep it appropriate morally. Let's don't go too far, too fast. So I think that's what we see here, is a commitment to keeping, even though they want to be together and she wants to be able to publicly show her affection, she doesn't want to show too much until they're in an appropriate setting in private. When we come to chapter 8, verse 5, we're kind of coming towards the conclusion. And I think what we can take from this last little bit is some things that'll help. Here's what I think they're doing. They're looking back. They are reflecting. Maybe they've been married now a long time, and they're reflecting on what the relationship was like from the beginning. Because this question in verse 5, who is coming up from the wilderness leaning on her beloved? I think that goes all the way back to the first section, or the consummation section, or the first part of the book, where there was a procession where he came to get her, and they're in the couch together being escorted back from the wedding party. He says, he's reflecting back, "Beneath the apple tree I awakened you, where your mother was in labor with you. There she was in labor and gave birth to you." Well, this is going all the way back to when she was born. And here's what I think we can take out of this. He's reflecting not only on their relationship, but he's reflecting on her as a person. They've been together long enough to realize that there is nobody, there was no other person born on earth who is better suited for this role as my spouse. I hope that's how you feel about your spouse after a lot of years of marriage. I've told my wife, and she's told me, there's not another man on earth that I have any desire to trade places with. I hope that's how you feel. I don't care how beautiful somebody else's wife is. I don't care how much money they might have. there's not another human being on earth that's better suited to being Mrs. Brad Shell than that lady right there. And I realized that after 46 years of being married to her. I think what he's doing here, he's looking back. The day you were born, when your mother gave birth to you, I can look back to that day and say, man, when God did that, I got me a gift. When we came together, I got the one that was made for me. So she says, put me like a seal over your heart and a seal over your arm. The seal was in that culture was something that showed possession. And she's saying, I want your thoughts, the heart, where the seat of our thoughts and our emotions. I want everything you think to demonstrate that I'm yours. I want everything you do to demonstrate that I am yours. Then it talks about the nature of love. For love is as strong as death. Can you avoid death? Can you avoid love? Not when the right one comes along. You know, that's just kind of the way it is. I said last time I hesitate the idea of, to talk about the idea of falling in love but I think in a sense, when you first meet somebody that you're attracted to, you're falling for them, right? Maybe that's it. You're falling for them. There's the attraction. There's the excitement. There's all of that. But it reaches a point where love is no longer an accident, because it's not. It's a choice of the will to love. So their love is, and jealousy is as severe as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. I think the imagery here maybe is that the Lord is portrayed as the source of this powerful love, because it's like the very flame of the Lord. It's so enduring that waters cannot quench it. Verse 7, many waters cannot quench it, nor will rivers overflow it. That reminds me of the song, ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no rivers wide enough to keep me from getting to you. And if a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly despised. The reality, folks, is you can't buy love, right? Shouldn't be able to. Can't. If you took all the wealth that you had, it wouldn't be adequate to purchase the treasure that you have in the one you love. And I think somebody that loves their spouse that way and that much, that if that there's no amount of money they wouldn't give to be able to keep that spouse if something were to happen. Reflecting back still, verse 8. She's reflecting back now to when she was young and the things that her brothers did to prepare her, to protect her. Remember, in the early parts of the book, she describes how her brothers made her work out in the vineyard. All right, that's going to come into light. What that means, some of the meaning is going to come into light now as we look at these verses. We have a little sister and she has no breasts. What's that mean? That means she's young. She's a little girl. What shall we do for our sister on the day she is spoken for? What do we got to do for her to make sure she's prepared for that day when somebody claims her as a wife that she's spoken for? Well, if she is a wall, what's the idea there? What's a wall do? Keep stuff out. Okay? If she's a wall, in other words, if she's pure, if she has a tendency to keep herself chaste, then we'll build on her a battlement of silver. That's a picture of enhancing. We're gonna build her up and enhance. We're gonna put on display just how valuable she is as a virtuous woman. But if she is a door, what do you do? What's a door do? It opens and lets things in. We're going to barricade her with planks of cedar. In other words, the brothers are keeping an eye on her character, seeing what kind of girl she is. And she says in verse 10, "What was I? Well, I was a wall. My breasts were like towers. Then I became in his eyes as the one who finds shalom, peace." In other words, this relationship is everything they both hoped it would be. Verse 11, Solomon had a vineyard. This is what happened. He had this vineyard here at Baal Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to caretakers. These caretakers were her brothers. Each one was to bring 1,000 shekels of silver for its fruit. And so this is what was happening. She was working with her brothers when she met. This is where she was when she met Solomon. Then she changes. "My very own vineyard is at my disposal. 10,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, for 200, and 200 are for those who take care of its fruit." This is verse 12, is him, I think him speaking. "My very own vineyard is at my disposal. The 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, 200 for those who take care of it." That's the way they divided up the profits from the produce of the vineyard. And so they're reflecting back to how they came together and what it's been, what it was like. There's value in that, in the marriage relationship. Look back at the circumstances, how God ordained the circumstances to bring you and your spouse together. And it should serve to nourish the relationship, encourage in the relationship, and strengthen the relationship. These last words of verses 13 and 14 are the words of two lovers as they recall the early passionate requests from their courtship days. Verse 13, "O you who sit in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it." In other words, this is him saying, "I want to hear your voice, and your voice in my ear." And her words are, "Hurry, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountain of spices." This is, she wanted, at this stage, even later in their marriage, they both wanted the same thing. They wanted the intensity in the desire, the love relationship, to continue to be as strong as it has ever been. So if there's a challenge in this book for us, I think maybe the challenge is, don't let the flames die out in your love relationship with your spouse. Keep the flames burning. The Song of Psalms, Song of Songs is a, the Song of Solomon is a beautiful picture of God's endorsement of physical love between a husband and a wife. We know from the rest of Scripture that marriage is to be a monogamous, permanent relationship in which we give of ourselves and are intensely devoted to each other and take delight in each other. That's why God designed the man to leave his father and mother and to cleave to his wife and them to become one, enter into this one flesh relationship. This book Sometimes when you read it, if you're reading it with somebody of the opposite sex, there was sometimes as we were studying it, there was almost felt like the need to blush, okay, to be uncomfortable by some of the what we saw. But this book shows us that the love relationship at sex within marriage is not anything dirty. The physical attractiveness between a man and a woman that they feel and have for each other, and the opportunity to satisfy those longings in the context of marriage is natural and it's honorable. But it also, the book also extols the virtue of the personalities, appreciating the personalities and the qualities other than just the physical in the relationship. So hopefully there's been some profit, some benefit from this, and we'll see where we go from here. Any questions, comments, thoughts, observations, or criticisms?